Welcome to the Zimcast, a program dedicated to bringing you what's new in agricultural marketing. The Zimcast is the official podcast of AgWired and hosted by Chuck and Cindy Zimmerman.
Hello and welcome to the Zimcast. I'm Chuck Zimmerman. I'd like to thank the sponsor for our program, and that's GrowMark, locally owned, globally strong. In this week's program, we are going to hear some information about some research that's been done on consumers and social media, and I'm going to let our guest explain all this. I have with me David Armano. He is Executive Vice President for Global Innovation and Integration. And David, I understand that you have just completed a program at the International Poultry Expo that's going on there, working with Novus International.
I did. Some of the things I talked about were basically what's next in regards to social media and digital. And really went into how some of the technology shifts kind of driven by the different ways that people are behaving are influencing how we communicate, but also how we do business. And so I actually started it by talking about how our own industry was changing, which is I work for Edelman, which is a public relations firm, and basically how the media landscape has shifted. I started off with the core shift there, which was the way we've done things in the past has been to sort of push out stories and really focus on mainstream media and telling those stories to what we call a multi-stakeholder audience. I then got into what we think the key shift is there, which affects consumers, but again, other stakeholders as well, and talked about this sort of concept of a media cloverleaf. And the big shift there is that it's not just traditional media outlets, but it's also what we call hybrid media, which are blogs and also media outlets like the Huffington Post, not quite mainstream, but not quite a small individual blog. It's all the social channels as well, the channels that people use to spread stories, to share personal information and share what they like, what they dislike. And also what we call owned, which are the sites that any organization has where they can share information as well. We believe firmly that any company can be a media company. And so when you put out a site today, it's not just a brochure, but it's a source of information that can be updated dynamically and updated regularly. So kicked it off with that model and then went to a number of the trends that we've been observing in the space.
Well, when you talk about these changes and, you know, if it weren't for some of these, the company that my wife and I have probably wouldn't exist, but because we come from the more traditional media arena, especially in the broadcast area. But we certainly in the agricultural sector, this has been real top of mind for some time. I think probably general consumers might be a little surprised about how well farmers have adopted or adapted to some of these social media platforms, and whether that's a farm or an agribusiness or a member organization. But there has been a lot of talk about trying to use these to reach consumers, for example. And is there some things you could share through research you've done in terms of the way these might work in terms of having an influence?
Well, yeah, we actually have some specific research that we do every year. We perform a study called the Trust Barometer every year, and that's based on polling what we call informed publics, which is people that are basically they're well versed in a variety of topics. We performed the poll. Actually, this year we've done it in a number of digital ways as well as via phone. And one of the findings was that traditionally, and this is good for this audience, academics and experts have been most trusted. They are perceived as the most credible spokespeople within any industry, and that's followed by technical experts in the company. Now, last year, the third most trusted individual was a financial or industry analyst. And this year, the third most trusted individual is a person like yourself. And so, and that actually was something that we had in the previous year, 2011, but it raised quite dramatically. Mm-hmm. And we think that is due to the fact that many people who are leveraging social networks have kind of gone through this sort of, you know, they've gone through these corrections where at first we saw a lot of that trust early on, and then we saw it shift back to folks like analysts. But we think we were seeing a resurgence of that as people are basically coming to terms with how they manage social networks, how they're able to filter out the signal from noise. So they still trust folks like academics and experts, but they look to others who they can relate to, people who they think are people just like themselves. And some of those people can be regular employees, and that's actually, in fact, the next level down, the fourth most trusted spokesperson, according to the poll, is someone who's just a regular employee. They're not an expert within the company, but they're just an employee that is active online as well, and who might be talking about issues. They could be leaving comments on forums and message boards. So when you look at some of these results, actually, some of the least credible, interestingly enough, CEOs took a nosedive last year. They were actually in the fourth place, and this year they're second to last. And we're also seeing government, which was last year second to last, this year is last. So we've seen CEOs and government take a bit of a nosedive, and we think that has a lot to do with what's happening in society in terms of perception of government, some of the inefficiencies, some of the scandals. And then also, you know, things that we've seen in Congress, specifically in the United States, and also the economy as well, where people are, they're not anti-business, but they're skeptical of it. So in general, the macro finding is that people are skeptical in general, but that when they look for credible individuals, it's a combination of experts and people who that they can relate to, mm-hmm. at least for 2012.
Well, here at this convention that is taking place this week, you've got a lot of experts who are going to be presenting lots of cutting-edge research and things that are not only going to be in terms of the production side of agriculture or farming here, but also from a food standpoint, information that even your everyday consumer would be very interested in. So when it comes to social media, what would you say to agribusiness companies and researchers and others that want to convey this information? I mean, is this really a viable way to do it? And is there a best way to approach that?
You know, that's a great question that segues to how I ended the talk. After going through some of the changes that were happening, some of the what those changes are causing. So, for example, everyone is empowered, not just experts, although experts are still trusted, but experts now have to share the stage, and that's being validated by things like social networks, the fact that you have a fragmented media landscape. Where I ended up was actually a spectrum, and we talked a lot about the media shifts, but the case that I made was that it's not these shifts in media via social actually have business impact. And so we like to think about it from a business standpoint. As a matter of fact, we use the term social business. And so within this construct of social business, we have sort of a four-step type of process where we see organizations and brands and businesses going through what many of them have done, maybe not in this industry as much, but many have sort of jumped right in and experimented, and then if they're committed, they realize that they have to actually scale and organize. But in any given stage, a company is basically starting off, and they're going from crawling to flying. So crawling could be something as simple as listening to what conversations are online and being able to customize your communications to meet that. Walking is figuring out how to engage and how to engage at scale, having all the process and the infrastructure in place. running is being able to do that with efficiency and being able to do that in a way that's integrated. And flying is actually doing it so that it's part of the business model And it's not just limited to one silo, for example, communications, but it's actually integrated across multiple. So just to give you an example, if a company is innovating because they're actually listening to customers or even listening to advocacy groups that maybe work against them, you know, where they're actually making a change based on something that they know needs to change, that's part of how they do business. So they become a social business. They've actually integrated social into not just how they communicate, but how they perform business operations.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the silo thing because, you know, especially when it comes to companies, there can certainly be that tendency to think that this type of strategy or what have you, you know, that fits in the communications group over here and not in marketing over here and certainly never in sales or research. But really, to do this in a most effective way, there really needs to be communication throughout those teams in an organization, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the core, and that's something I brought up as well, was if, and I think this goes for any industry, I think in the case of agriculture or even in industries that are regulated especially, a lot of this is not at a point that you see some companies, a lot of consumer brands, or brands that actually have advanced the theories are brands and companies that have experienced a crisis scenario, and they've actually been the most aggressive in it, but Even in the event of a company working in a regulated industry, if you want to do something as simple as just, there was actually a point with the audience where I showed an influence map, and one of the things that it did was it basically illustrated the types of conversations that people were having online about the dairy industry. And I think that resonated with this group because the point that I made was if you're not cognizant of what people are talking about, you can't optimize your own communications and you'll basically be tone deaf. So I think there was resonance on that point, and it's not a high risk type of tactic, but it takes having the right people, process, and even some of the right technologies to use for any organization to do that. Yeah. And if you don't have those things in place, you can't do it. So it requires some level of organizational design, even just to start with the baby step.
What else might you have wanted this group to take away from your presentation? And if you had some, I don't know, some Q&A or whatever, what did you maybe find those that you were speaking to most interested in?
Definitely what I just mentioned last, the idea of being in tune with the topics that are actually happening online and not being out of step with that. I think that's kind of the low-hanging fruit that resonated with the audience. That for sure. And I think really just at more macro level, the idea that regardless of industry, a lot of these changes are taking place. I gave a couple of examples. I gave a case study that we had done with American Ag Board as a client of ours where we did craft a story that led to a lot of impressions, and it was starting with a sort of scientific data point in terms of USDA research coming out that actually showed that eggs had 15% less cholesterol, and we helped tell that story through a lot of traditional media outreach, but we didn't stop there. We also performed outreach to what we call the hybrid groups, and we monitored conversations that happened as a result of that. So I think a big takeaway there is that there is a new way to work in this sort of new media construct, this, you know, so-called cloverleaf that has these four spheres that is applicable to any organization that wants to get their story out and wants to actually help drive the right kinds of conversations.
Well, I like your cloverleaf analogy. That's kind of a new one to me, but it certainly makes a lot of sense and helps maybe make it a little easier to understand, too. I just want to thank you again for taking some time to visit here. Just wanted to get some of your thoughts for those of us who couldn't be there for your presentation. So I'm just going to go ahead and close it here, David. That's David Armano. He is Executive Vice President for Global Innovation and Integration. He was speaking today at a luncheon here that's kind of the kickoff of what they call IPE Week in Atlanta, International Poultry Expo, and all the various things that make up this huge annual show. Well, that's our Zimcast for this week. I hope you've enjoyed it, and thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the Zimcast, the official podcast of AgWired. Check us out at www.agwired.com to find out what's new in agricultural marketing.